All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first couple segments with Rick Rule. Focus more on the precious metals. Now we're shifting our focus more to the energy sector, as I am chatting with Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. As we usually do with Dan, we're going to start off with more macro comments on oil and natural gas and then get into a couple company questions that all of you have sent in, as well as some companies that Dan thinks are just broadly undervalued due to where the market price is and their production data. Dan, let's start off with the oil price. Not much to talk about in terms of oil other than it's trading in a tighter range. Since really mid-November here, we've seen highs of close to $80 and lows of about $67. It's been honestly kind of a boring trade recently as oil is stuck in the low 70s. Dan, what are some of the catalysts on tap that could break oil out either to the upside or the downside?
The oil actually came in above my forecast for the fourth quarter. It actually averaged, WTI averaged about $77 a barrel for the quarter because, you know, in October, I think we got to 92 for a few days and then it dropped and traded in a low range, got to the low 70s. But I just want to remind everybody, these companies are very profitable if oil stays at 70. I mean, they made it through a long period of oil below 50. And so, and the balance sheets are in really good shape. So the companies themselves are doing fine. The gas price has been a real disappointment at this point, but maybe, we're going to get a big, very bullish storage report next week. So that'll be interesting. It's really, as we were discussing before we got online here, I'm amazed with this stuff going on in the Middle East and, you know, with the Red Sea and all the ships having to not go through the Suez Canal. That's a big deal. And it just doesn't seem like it's not reacting right now. But we're kind of also in this period where there's no news coming out from this, from the individual companies are trying to wrap up their year-end reports and stuff. So very little information is coming out on the companies at this point. But anyway, I'm hoping that oil's just in a basing formation. I looked at the IEA report, monthly report came out, and they say that above ground inventories declined again in November and are at the lowest point that they've been in years. At this point, you would think that would be pushing oil prices up, but oil is seasonal. Oil demand is seasonal. And, you know, when you get these big winter storms, people hunker down and they don't drive around. So that cuts down on transportation. But when you get to March and the weather starts improving, from March to June, global demand for oil goes up about 2 million barrels a day. So that should push it back to the 80 range, I hope, at least.
It has been interesting to see those issues in the Middle East just don't have an impact on oil right now. This whole geopolitical or war premium is not in the market for really any sector out there. So then circling back to the supply and demand data here, anything that stood out to you either in terms of North American supply or anything internationally that has swung maybe a little bit more to a balanced market since we have seen a much flatter price?
Yeah, I think what you're going to see next week is EIA is going to report a pretty significant drop in U.S. production for the week ending January 19th. I heard just this morning that North Dakota production is down about 600,000 barrels a day because of well freeze-offs up there in the Bakken shale play. And that's going to be affecting, you know, the other rocky stuff in Powder River Basin. And I think this coming week, I expect to hear about a lot of well freeze-offs on the gas wells that are up there in Ohio and Pennsylvania and the Marcellus and Utica. And that happens to you because there's, with all wells, there's a certain amount of water that's in what's coming out of the ground. And they'll have the, you know, gathering lines or something freeze, and then they got to shut in the wells. So that can be a big deal. And then it usually takes quite a bit of time to get those wells back online. You have to have a, you know, extended period above freezing before you can get them back online. So we'll see. But then I think people will be surprised by how strong fourth quarter results are. Most of the companies that I follow now, I expect them to beat my earnings per share forecast for the fourth quarter.
All right. Well, not much more to say in terms of the oil price. Again, it's stuck in a range. Let's see if it breaks higher or lower, but one thing we all see within the stocks is that a flat commodities price doesn't really excite investors to drive down into the stocks, unfortunately. Let's move over to natural gas, because a lot more to talk about here. The last time we chatted was mid-December, pretty much at the low for the natural gas price at about 220 to 230. And then natural gas went up and up and up the whole way through early January, the whole way up to almost 340. But now, boy, oh boy, it had a big drop this week. And now we're trading back in more around the 250 to 260 range. And what's this volatility in natural gas?
Well, natural gas prices in the futures market, the price you see is the front month futures contract. So now they're trading the, you know, gas for February delivery or something. And when the utilities believe they have enough gas in storage to make it through the winter, then they pull out of the futures market. So there's nobody willing to take those long contracts and actually take physical delivery. And then the paper traders that, you know, that are just hedge funds or something trading the futures contracts, they get stuck in the long positions. Then they just have to bail out because they can't take physical delivery. I mean, if they do, they're going to get invoiced for storage fees and stuff. Anyway, it's a very interesting market, and I will tell everybody, the biggest price spikes in natural gas futures market, the futures market, happen not during the winter. They happen during the summer, believe it or not. If you go run like a 25-year chart and just look at the big peaks, and we've seen in the last 20 years, we've had $13 gas. Last year, what did we have? $9 gas or something that spiked to. And what that was utility companies getting into a bidding war with the LNG exporters for physical supply. So they were coming into the futures market. So then you had an excess of buyers for those futures contracts and not enough sellers. So they were trading, they were bidding against each other. Now, in the spot market down here in Texas, because we had, for Texas, some extremely cold weather. And we do rely on wind energy. And a lot of times when it's really cold down here, which today it's crystal clear skies, it's going to get below freezing again down in Houston. And so in West Texas, the oil fields, and we depend on wind. We have about 13 or 14% of our electricity comes from wind. Well, what happens sometimes is when we're in these high pressure deals is there's no wind and the windmills stop turning. And then they really got to fire up the gas-fired power plants. And so in the spot market down here, I think it's been really active in the last couple of weeks.
What about some of these LNG facility builds? You were sharing with me off mic that some of these are being delayed. So how does that also potentially impact price and also future price?
Yeah, there was two of them that were expected to come online here this summer, and they've been pushed back a few months, and they'll eventually get online. That's going to add about 3 or 4 BCF a day of demand. I've heard that the one problem is, you know, there's a bunch of these things in a process right now, and the construction companies that are building them are having trouble finding quality workers. You don't want to hire a welder right out of welding school to be welding pipes that's going to be taking super high pressures and stuff. So then they got to all be inspected and everything before they can ramp up. But, you know, that's going to impact, you know, maybe if it's not this year, it'll be next year at a lot of demand. Anyway, we're blessed to have an abundance of gas. It's what keeps our utility bills low, but it's, you know, tough on the gassers. But they can make money there. They are cash flow positive. Even if gas stays at 250, they've suffered through 250 gas for many, many years before. If we do ever firmly get above $3, these things are going to be making a lot of money.
Okay, well, I guess we'll wait for it to get above $3, because when it does get above $3, boy, it seems to reverse quite quickly. Let's get into the stocks. I know a lot of our listeners want to follow along with the stocks, and I did have a few emails over the last few weeks asking about dividends and how sustainable these dividends are. I had a listener point to Birchcliff that was paying a 14% dividend, but then announced earlier this week on the 17th, they're cutting their dividend by 50%. Do you think we're going to see more of this from the sector here, Dan?
Well, we have a high yield income portfolio, and I look really hard. These are companies that I've followed for a long time, and I only move them in there when I think there are sustainable dividends. The ones that do kind of go up and down with the commodity price directly are the minerals companies. And these are ones that all they do, they own the minerals, and they don't have any drilling costs. So they don't, you know, they just get royalty checks from the operating companies that are own the working interest. So they're pretty sustainable, and they would have to have an ex, you know, a very long period of time before it would affect their deal, and especially the ones that have a lot of oil production. So look at the production mix now, and also I will tell you, helping the gassers is, I just looked this morning, NGL prices are going up with this, you know, cold winter through the middle of the country. A lot of the people that live in the middle third of the United States in the rural areas, they heat their homes and cook with propane. And we've had a surplus of propane, but man, the demand was going sky high. And I looked at the price chart this morning, and it's up to 80 cents a gallon. So that's, they're going to be reporting some nice NGL prices. The one I like there is Antero Resources. It does not pay a dividend, but their midstream company, which is publicly traded, is Antero Midstream. It has a really secure fixed dividend, and their future is tied to Antero's aggressive drilling program. So that one looks really good. I like, for just safety of dividends, the safest companies would be the midstream companies. I like ONEOK, Antero Midstream there. I like Plains All American. It's an MLP that trades as PAA, but I like the general partner as a C Corp. So you don't have to wait on a K-1, and it trades as PAGP. So that's a real solid dividend payer there. So.
So is it simply just looking at the income statement to gauge if these dividends are sustainable at current energy prices?
Yeah, and then also look at the balance sheet and look at their debt, how it's structured. And the companies that I got in there, they have very little debt problems. So, I mean, they're super cash flow positive, so they've paid off a lot of their near-term debt, and they don't have any coming due anytime soon. So that would be the big thing. If a company's got, like, in the next 6 months, they got some senior debt that has to be paid off. So those are the ones you kind of want to avoid, because then if you get this period of low commodity prices, it makes it impossible for them to roll that debt over.
Thanks for the insights there, Dan. Please, everyone, keep on sending me your questions for Dan. Let's get into two companies that you have sent me. Both companies are in your Sweet 16 growth portfolio, and you consider both of these companies value plays. So that means that they're both trading at deep discounts to your current valuations. Let's start off with SM Energy, traded SM. It's a mid-cap focused in the Midland Basin, as well as South Texas, Eagle Ford area. Now, the current market cap, little over $4 billion. Dan, your valuation here is much higher, almost a double from where current prices are. Take us through what you like about SM.
Well, SM stands for St. Mary's. When they started, it was in St. Mary's Parish, Louisiana. And today, I don't think they have a single drop of oil production in St. Mary's Parish. So they're based in Denver, and they changed their name to SM Energy. They have two core areas. The big growth area is in the Permian Basin on the Midland Basin side. That's the eastern third of the Permian Basin. It's called the Midland Basin. They're running four rigs over there. And then in South Texas, way out west, they're drilling in an area that's kind of gas prone, but it produces a lot of high value NGLs. So that's what I like about it. So they have two rigs running there. So they're running six rigs total and a couple completion crews. So they're going to have steady new wells coming online all year. They're big enough to where they can fund this, you know, continuous drilling program. And that's important. I like the production mix. It's got 40. First of all, it produces currently about 152,000 BOE per day of production. That's barrel of oil equivalent. It's 42% crude oil, 18% high value NGLs, and about 40% natural gas. But when you look at their revenues are generated by 83% of their revenues come from liquid sales. So look at the natural gas side. If natural gas does ever really, you know, bounce up, get well above three or something, that would be a big plus for this company. And I actually like that, you know, hanging out their bonus thing. They generated about $500 million of free cash flow in 2023. They pay a small dividend. It's only got about a 2% dividend yield. But now that they've met their debt reduction goals, I think they will be increasing their dividend. In fact, their last dividend was an increase over the prior quarter. So they paid out 18 cents in the quarter. The stock, again, is trading about $35, $36. and my valuation is $58. So it trades, the symbol is SM. Check it out. And they have a very good PowerPoint that describes the business. And so I'd recommend if investors go through that first, and that'll give you a really good idea. But they got a lot of running room. That's another thing I like about this company. Their leverage on the balance sheet is really low now, and they have a lot of running room, a lot of high-quality drilling locations, which also makes it a takeover target for a larger company.
So, Dan, regarding growth here of SM Energy, it's about a 4.5% year-over-year production growth, which maybe doesn't excite some investors. And as you said, current dividends only around 2% annual yield. So this doesn't really seem so much like a growth story, more of just a story that's being very much unloved by the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they were a much more aggressive growth company a few years ago, and they got the message from the market. They said, we want to see dividends. We want to see you guys pay down some debt and everything. And their management team took that advice, and they've really improved the balance sheet. I mean, if you go back like 3 years ago, like the end of 2019, before the pandemic, it was a pretty leveraged up balance sheet. Well, there it's in really good shape now, as they've paid off a couple $1 billion worth of debt in the last few years.
Okay. So now it's more about returning capital to shareholders.
Yeah, return to capital. Yeah.
Hey, I've heard from a lot of companies, energy companies, that that is what investors are looking for. Let's move on to the other company that you wanted to share here, Vital Energy, traded VTLE. This is a smaller company, especially compared to SM Energy. This is about $1.5 billion market cap. You have a much higher valuation here, over double the current $42 share price. Why do you think this one's being so unloved?
Okay, one reason I wanted to mention this today, it's not quite as big as SM. It's got, on a production, it just reported fourth quarter production of 113,400 BOE per day, but it's got a more oily mix, which makes those BOEs more valuable. So it's 47% crude oil, 25% NGLs, and only 28% natural gas. So I think when you compare this directly to see where SM's trading at, you know, a market cap of $4 billion, and this one's only trading at a market cap of $1.4 billion, I think it if you compare it directly with SM, it's a double. It should be a double just to get to where SM is trading. They completed last year two very transformational acquisitions. One of the negatives about this company, it didn't have a lot of real high quality running room. A lot of their Permian Basin assets are in the Midland Basin, an area that a lot of people consider kind of tier two acreage, but they made some big acquisitions last year, which have increased their production from the first quarter of 2023 to the fourth quarter. Their production's up 41%, primarily because of those two deals, but it also gives them a lot of high quality running room. And there, if this is a pure Permian Basin company, and the acquisitions gave them a really nice foothold in the Delaware Basin, which is the western part of the Permian, where some of the best wells in the world, literally the best wells in the world, are being drilled in the Delaware Basin. They're coming on at 4,000 or 5,000 barrels per day. And they released an operations update on January 9th that just crushed my fourth quarter forecast. They beat way above the high end of their guidance for the quarter, beat my forecast by 8,000 BOE per day, a pretty nice beat. They are free cash flow positive. They're generating about $50 million a quarter of free cash flow, and I think that they'll be able to maintain that even if oil stays at around 70. The balance sheet is not quite as strong as SM's because they've made these two big acquisitions with like half debt and half stock. If you're familiar with Earthstone Energy that I've mentioned on your show several times, that's been acquired by Permian Resources, Vital is doing everything they can to become an attractive takeover target. I mean, they're going down this path just exactly where Earthstone went. And there's probably going to be a lot of people looking at this company if they're looking for a takeover target. And this would be, you know, a $2 billion deal to buy it if it happened.
Okay, so those acquisitions, the two of them from last year, already filtered into the production for the tail end of last year. How much more could they help increase 2024 production?
Yeah, I got them going up. Hang on, let me get. Oh, and one thing I want to point out too is They've hedged about 93% of this year's oil production is hedged at $75. And they did that to meet their debt covenants and to lock in that free cash flow. So that's a good thing.
So then in terms of the acquisitions, then we were going to get to the hedging, but look, they've already locked in $75 per barrel. What about the acquisitions? How are those going to continue to grow the company this year?
Well, I mean, they have not given any guidance yet for this year, but my forecast and my valuation is based on only 115,000 BOE per day, which now that this, big production beat for the fourth quarter is out there, I'm going to probably need to increase my production forecast by about 10,000 barrels a day. So, they'll give more guidance when they release their fourth quarter results, but which are going to be good. I'm telling you, at that price, they're going to report about $2.85 earnings per share. Now, remember, this is a stock trading for what, $40 or $42, and they're going to have full year reported earnings per share of over $20 a share for 2023. So this stock's trading for like a PE ratio of 2. The operating cash flow for 2023, $37 a share. So it's trading just barely over 1x cash flow. When I was working on M&A stuff for Hess, this company would be a screaming takeover target for us. Now, big companies like Hess or, Exxon, why did Exxon buy Pioneer? They buy these companies not as much for their current production. What they're buying them for is their acreage, their leasehold, how much drilling inventory they have. Because a lot of these big companies are constantly wanting to maintain their drilling inventory, high quality drilling inventory. And that's what I think makes this one really attractive. And some of these wells they reported coming online in the fourth quarter look really, really strong. So it didn't get the attention. I mean, right now, like we discussed before, it's kind of like the whole sector is just, under a dark cloud or something. I don't know what, but man, when I saw that operations report, I was like, wow. And I think the stock just barely moved that day.
Yeah, it seems like investors just distracted by other sectors. Look at how strong the equity markets, tech stocks ended this week too. So it is one of those, as we said early on here, is that if the underlying commodity price is not moving higher and seems like moving higher every day, well, some of the underlying stocks, most of the underlying stocks, more or less just get forgotten. But hey, Dan, thank you so much for your insights. I love reading over your work at the Energy Prospectus Group. We'll be chatting next month. So everyone, keep sending me your questions for Dan. Keep sending me your questions for all the guests we have on the show and the companies that we feature throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. I thank you all for tuning in this weekend. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend. We'll be back next week at a conference in Vancouver, but throughout the later part of the week, check back on our website. We'll have plenty of updates to give you. Dan, everyone, have a great rest of your weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.